from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right. If you missed us yesterday, Monday shows are a little shorter, so you may have missed this yesterday. Things that Seth is bullish on and things that the rundown says peeing down his leg.
Right, I said Gosser Cherilis.
Gosser Cherilis, yeah.
Gosser Cherilis watched some of the Texans, and that's why he urinated on a fellow passenger on his flight and was arrested
for it.
That's
right. He's worried about the run game and Damian Pierce.
Yeah. Let's start with the obvious.
Yeah.
These receivers, Sean. Good. Have you heard about the Texans receivers?
I heard the good news about the Texans receivers? I have, but let's pretend I haven't.
Right,
tell me
okay,
about them.
So
tell me about these guys.
They have these three guys in Tank Dell, Nico Collins, and Stephon Diggs.
Never had three
are
good
all
ones
fully,
at the same time?
Yes, at the same time. Fully integrated, fully optimized, and it looks like they're ready to go. I think that CJ is very much on the same page as all of them. I think one of the better things, though, too, in terms of becoming a genuinely elite offense, not just an elite passing offense, is that they all like blocking. They, we've seen sometimes Tank Dell, that's to his detriment almost, but
yeah.
they're all about it, and that's something, and then this scheme, if you want to break big runs eventually, if the offensive line can ever start blocking appropriately, then they can break some big runs.
These wide receivers are actual dogs.
Yes.
They are dogs.
I
know everybody gets called a dog by Laramie Tunsil.
It's the one position group. A quarterback, that's the problem with it right now, with it becoming a genuinely good offense. The only dogs on the offense as position groups right now are your quarterbacks and your receivers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
when
it comes to offensive line, fullbacks, and tight ends, not a lot of dog there yet.
We're hanging out at the Humane Society trying to find some dogs.
Dog AF, yes. So I feel good about that. Okay. I feel good that the passing game is coming along just like it should. The pass blocking is actually suitable, too.
CJ
right.
had some good pockets
that was
this
case,
preseason.
That was the case last year, though, too. They pass blocked not bad. It was the run blocking that was pathetic.
Here, let's hear from Dalton Schultz about this. Dalton Schultz was asked yesterday how the dynamic of Tank Dell and Diggs being and Nico being downfield threats, how does that open things up for the tight ends?
Big, dude. Like, whenever you have, like, vertical threats, like, teams drop deeper. Linebackers, now their hook drops are, 12 yards instead of 8. Like, it affects everything. Even when they feel that, like, vertical push, the guys are trying to stay on top. And when you got two burners, when you add Nico to that mix, like, so three guys can stretch the field, man. So it opens up stuff underneath sometimes in certain coverages. And honestly, like, it creates space for us in the backs. And, like, I love having it because it's playing our defense is, like, hard in practice because, like, they're in your hip all the time, whether they're zone or man. It's, like, it's frustrating. And you get to some games and it's, like, teams are just spot drop and you feel that space. You know what I mean? And so it's very beneficial for sure.
Think about when Dalton Schultz signed here on a 1 year. Now, he re-signed this offseason, but he signed last year in March a 1 year deal, a 1 year prove it deal. And he proved it. He got a 3 year deal for more money per year this offseason. When he signed here, they had drafted CJ Stroud. They hadn't drafted Tank Dell. Nico Collins was just a big dude who showed flashes and got hurt all the time. He's in an offense now where he's got Tank Dell, Nico Collins, Stephon Diggs, mm-hmm. Joe Mixon, and C.J. Stroud.
Right.
When he signed here, the only one out of all of them that was on the team was Nico, and we had no clue that Nico would turn what he turned into. Like, mm-hmm. Dalton Schultz, that's like 14 months ago.
Yeah.
And think about how the offense has evolved.
It's really, yeah, it's cool, man. It's fun.
Very
it's
cool.
Fun. But again, the one, and we'll get to it when I'm peeing down my leg in a little
bit. Yep, yep. What else do you like? What are you bullish on?
Look, the pass rush. I like the pass rush a lot. Obviously.
Even the backups.
Yeah. You're right. Derek Barnett is doing a great job. Ollie Gay is getting a whole lot of play time. I like him right now, and I think they're going to use him. They probably want to use him situationally. He does a really good job of using those really long arms of his and everything else in the run game. He made one really nice play the other day where he turned the ball back in and then looped around and made the tackle.
Is he making the team?
I would be surprised if he doesn't.
Okay.
He's played like 40-plus snaps.
He's played the third most snaps against the Steelers, and he played the most snaps against the Giants. Yeah. He played 43 snaps in a preseason
game. I think they look at him as a guy that, man, if he can really genuinely learn to use that, like he is tall and he has long arms. If he can really learn to use that effectively, which I like, he's made progress from last year in this regard. I think they like him, so I think he's there. So, I feel really good about that. The defensive tackles, I'm not as... They're a lot better than people feared, but I don't think they're going to necessarily be a menacing force or whatnot.
It's always been kind of curious. Like, people... I was nervous about the defensive tackle position, and it was tough when you knew they wanted Arik Armstead, and then he goes to Jacksonville instead. Yeah. Although, if they want to pay him 3 years...
Arik Armstead, I was kind of nervous about the fact that they wanted him as much as they did because he's been injured a lot.
Right.
And he was injured, and he's in his 30s. He was injured for most of training camp up until now.
Yeah, but as far as like the perception of it at the time, it was like, okay, that would have been a big move, perceived to be a big move. It was always kind of funny to me that people treated like Malik Collins and Sheldon Rankin's not coming back as if you just lost like...
Right.
Aaron Donald and, you know, Richard Seymour. Right.
I do not recall this gushing of praise over Sheldon Rankins and Malik Collins.
They're fine.
Until they were gone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden it turned a bunch of us into, you know, people that never appreciated their wife, and then the wife leaves. You're like, what? Why? Oh, it turns out that I'm not as confident as I thought I was. Yeah, I'm not as worried about it. I think they're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, with DeNico Autry coming back and playing defensive tackle. I'm not concerned about the run defense from a defensive tackle standpoint. I'm more concerned about how much pass rush do you actually get out of them.
Yeah.
And that's where DeNico Autry hopefully will make a big difference. But I'm not at panic level over that or anything.
No, no. Okay, what else do you like?
I like John Metchie, but we've already kind of covered him. Other than that, just because emotionally we're wrapped up in him.
Yeah.
And he looks like he's clicked and he's starting to take that next step.
I had him making the team before Saturday's game.
Yeah.
So I definitely have him making the team now. And I'm not saying like he's going into Saturday, he had been one of the top six receivers on this team. He hadn't been. He'd gone through a really rough couple weeks. But you got to look at the dynamics of age and the likelihood of another team picking him up if they want to bring him back on the practice squad. Metchie would get picked up if they were to waive him. They wouldn't be able to bring him back.
I am currently bullish on the young offensive lineman, but that's a futures bet. I think both Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green have done some really good things, but there are also times where they show their youth. Likewise with Blake Fisher, I'm very bullish on him overall, long term. I think he's got the athleticism. I think his technique is coming along. There's just times right now where if he had to start in a game, his youth really shows up. That first play coming out of the end zone where it was almost a safety, he got veteran moved and duped by a combination of the linebacker and the defensive end. Basically, he ends up letting the defensive end run free because he was trying to do the right thing, but he just kind of overcompensated for it. He was trying to take care of the inside threat, and the defensive end comes and makes the tackle, almost for a safety on that. That was more about youth than it was an inability or anything, so he just needs more reps.
Yeah.
He got That spin move by Brian Burns and pass protection sick. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was also, though, it was a little bit of a welcome to the NFL moment.
For sure. Yeah.
I think over time, a lot of Blake Fisher's issues right now are where he's just, and this is what young offensive linemen do, they're taking steps that are too big. They're trying to do the right thing almost too aggressively, and instead of keeping everything as close to the vest as possible. So I'm bullish on him over the course of the season. I just don't feel awesome about him right now. If Laremy Tunsil or Titus Howard gets injured, can you guys hold off until like week five or week
six? Yeah, get him some more experience before you get injured, okay? Kenyon and Juice both had really good PFF grades, by the way.
Did they?
12 pass block snaps for each, 0 pressures. Kenyon Green hasn't given up a pressure in the preseason yet.
Mm.
And they played him quite a bit out there.
Yeah, so I think he's coming along nicely.
This is a way better version than the one we had his rookie year.
As we move down into the peeing down my leg part of it.
Yeah,
okay,
let's go.
If we talk about the rushing offense
in
general.
Let's hear it, Chairless. Yeah.
Like, one of those plays, one of those negative run plays, all of them were negative run plays. There were 4 of them in the game with the first team offense, and all of them were bad.
Yeah.
Kenyon Green, the 3 different players on the Giants defense pointed out the fact that Kenyon Green was pulling.
Yeah, he's got to disguise things a little bit.
He's got a tell in his stance. They knew exactly what play was coming, and the defensive line and the linebacker and the Mike linebacker shut it down with extreme prejudice because they read the playbook beforehand. They knew exactly what was coming.
Is that an easily fixable thing for him, or does he just...
I think for him it is, because now that he's more athletic, sometimes it's the bigger guys that give it away more, because...
If you're big and hefty,
you kind of really start cheating. The fat guys, it's fun because it gets worse as the game goes on.
They get tired.
Sometimes you see it on film, but you're not really sure. And then you're watching it in the first part of the game as a defensive lineman. You're watching it, and then all of a sudden by the third and fourth quarter, you're like, yeah, I know what this guy's doing. With Kenyon, I think it's probably more just... And sometimes you see it on film, but you're not sure, and then you see it at field level, and you know. They called it out. Kenyon pulls, tries to kick out Kayvon Thibodeau. Kayvon Thibodeau played it perfectly and just really, really gave Kenyon his lunch on the block there. Because Kayvon Thibodeau both bounced the play outside and then still made the tackle himself, too.
You can see how freaky he is.
And so, like, that's the kind of stuff, some of these tells, that's on the offensive line coach, that's on the players themselves. You guys aren't good enough run blockers to line up and be like, hey, this is what play's coming, and we're going to take it to you anyway.
Yeah.
When they try to run old school football gap scheme blocking stuff, they're not physical or tough enough to do it as an offensive line right now.
Yeah.
And the run game, it's not just Damian Pierce, it's the blocking too. I wanted to wait until I could watch the all 22 because I really wasn't all that impressed with the offensive line from the game, from watching it on the TV copy.
Yeah.
But it really, they gotta figure this out.
Yeah.
Mixon will be better than Damian Pierce. Mixon will be better than Cam Akers. There were times where Damian Pierce, who's the other guy I'm peeing down my leg about, where the blocking wasn't right, but there are a lot of backs that could have turned those 1-yard gains into 5-yard plays.
For sure.
And Damian just hasn't shown any ability to do that yet.
Okay, what do you make of D'Amico Ryans at his press conference yesterday? He was asked about the first team rushing offense.
Yeah.
This is a really interesting
cut. Yeah, and the guy's asking the question. Like, they haven't said Damian by name. I control-F'd it when I got the transcripts to the press conference.
Yeah.
So I'm like, did they not ask about... But they did ask about the first team rushing offense.
Yeah, it almost feels like, man, everybody loves Damian, and they're handling him with kid gloves kind of a little bit.
It's like when your favorite child is all of a sudden having issues at school or something. You just want to believe it's not true.
Right.
Is he smoking marijuana?
You can't even refer to him by his name. You're just like, it's my first kid.
Not Jimmy.
So take a listen to this. This is D'Amico when he was asked about the struggles of the first team rushing offense with, and that included Damian Pierce's 4 carries for 5 yards.
Yeah, no, not sure how many rushes we had for our first unit. I know we had one outside zone play that we mistargeted a guy. We missed a guy, so a guy was free in the hole on one. And then another probably, you know, missed a run where we could have been downhill. But, you know, overall, I think it's with our O-line, our tight ends, and how it's hard to judge off a couple runs. I think we threw the ball a lot with our first team, so there weren't really many runs to judge, and I don't want to, you know, judge our team off of 2 runs. That's unfair to, you know, make a judgment off of 2 runs.
Yeah, I don't... I, I feel like D'Amico was trying to be nice.
I feel
there.
Like he doesn't want to talk about the elephant in the room.
That was a lot of pausing because it's not just it's not. To, it was four runs, and
he
you,
knows that.
And then you include the runs from the first the second preseason game.
Yeah,
The first Steeler real game. Preseason game with your starting offense, and it hasn't been good.
No,
like in those plays that he's talking about, it's not just one guy. It's I'm trying to figure out. I sent some to my old offensive line teammates. And I'm trying to figure out who the offensive line is even trying to work up to because the backers are going completely unblocked and it doesn't look like the O-line is trying to actually even work up to the one of those plays. Nobody's trying to work up to either of the linebackers. And it put the fullback in a bind. I don't feel good about it.
You're super nervous about this.
Yeah, they're all
right
over
now.
The place. There's a lot of guys.
There's a puddle underneath you right now.
There's no clarity as to what the offensive line is doing in the zone scheme. And then when they try to do gap scheme stuff, they just don't have the physicality to do it. So it's not been good over the first couple of games with the starting offense.
What's another leg-peeing thing you got going on right now?
Red zone.
Yeah, red zone.
Red zone.
Yeah.
Somebody asked a question of CJ the other night, and they cited how many trips to the red zone with no touchdowns. And it sounded...
Last season?
No, in the preseason so far. He said 7, but that's not right. So I don't know
chance.
If it was
he hasn't been in
right
been in for a quarter.
Maybe he meant
series.
7. Oh, were there 7 plays in the red zone?
That could be.
And yeah, that's probably what it
that,
was.
That could be.
There's
7
plays,
plays
in the red zone.
Yeah.
They couldn't score. Part of that is because you burned a couple of downs on run plays
that didn't go anywhere.
You know.
And I don't know that they'd be throwing fades to the back corner of the end zone to Schultz and Nico in the regular season.
This ties back into not having a run game. So hopefully Joe Mixon makes a big difference there. Like because the running back. The running back can make the O-line right at times, so even when it's not picture-perfect, the running back makes it right. But without establishing a good rushing offense, as we saw last year, it's really hard to have a good red zone offense.
Yeah.
Because the defensive backs and the linebackers just have less ground to cover in the pass game. If you're not threatening with the run game, then they're just sitting back there in coverage.
And I could see them calling fades down in the red zone just because that's a play where CJ's going to get rid of the ball quickly.
Yeah.
You're not going to subject him. The one play down there on those four downs where they did have him actually drop back and let some patterns develop is the one where Blake Fisher got spun by Brian Burns. And in the regular season, you know, CJ probably gets tattooed in that
right, yeah,
game.
Brian Burns, to his credit, was
eased
a gentleman
up.
On that play. Either to his credit as a gentleman or because he didn't want to get fined.
It was fourth down. Well, yeah. It was four. I could see where even in the regular season, maybe he'd ease up because it was fourth down. You don't want to get a rough in the passer
it's
penalty.
It's so tricky, though, too. Because the contact was after the ball was gone.
Yeah.
And they just... There's no you're allowed one or two steps anymore. I don't know what he would have done in the regular season.
Yeah, yeah.
In the regular season, he might have launched out already to,
I'm seeing depth at cornerback is making you pee here as well, huh?
Well, I mean, Mike Ford was out there in the first half.
Yeah.
And that's when people
and
started to think.
Malik Nabers
like,
was having a good time with him.
I mean, we've seen that in practice. I thought that was a little bit of Mike Ford's had a rough training camp, I think, in terms of letting up a lot of plays in practice.
Mm-hmm.
And... The fact that he's out there in the first half kind of hints at just where you are right now with depth at cornerback.
Yeah.
So if Derek Stingley can't stay healthy for the first time since 2019, then it could potentially get a little bit dicey.
Stingley, it's Lassiter, Petrie is kind of a corner. He's like half a corner right now.
I mean, we saw it last year in the Browns regular season game when Steven Nelson had to go out of the game and you had a cornerback taking his first snap.
D'Angelo Ross.
Cornerback in the regular season.
Yeah, number 37.
Versus a guy that would go on to have a 250-yard passing.
That day.
I you know what I forgot to mention in the guys I'm bullish on is Jalen Petrie. Since Petrie was tied to that. That play last year where it was really bad.
He looked good.
I was able to go back and watch Jalen Petrie on some of the plays that he didn't make. One of them specifically where he came up and took on an offensive lineman and Jalen Petrie's job on that play is to just turn the play back inside. And Jalen Petrie stonewalled the offensive lineman. Big fatty from Ebuchadnezzar or whatever his name is. Illusion Fields. I don't know what his name is. From the Giants.
Oh.
He's got an E name.
Yeah.
Jalen Petrie kind of stoned him.
Yeah.
It ends up being a stalemate, but it's a much smaller guy. hitting a much larger guy, and then Jalen Petrie let him know about it afterwards.
Oh, did he?
Was yelling at him, basically said,
"He
should be ashamed of yourself."
He likes to talk out there.
How are you going to be that fat and then get stoned by me?
Yep. From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
A lot of people weighing in on some of the stuff you're talking about. A lot of people share some of your concerns here. I'm very concerned that they're going to let Mills go. I personally think it's a bad idea. Do y'all have an update? Caserio addressed that in the pregame interview he does with John Harris. I don't think Davis Mills is going anywhere.
No, and when that person says that, I wonder if they mean that they're going to trade Mills.
That's what I mean. Okay. Yeah, they're going to let him go. Yeah, that's
right.
Yeah, that's how I interpreted it too. Like he won't be on the team anymore.
Because that could also be a cut.
Yeah, I definitely don't think they're cutting him for sure.
Usually, when you say you let somebody go, that's a cut.
Yeah.
But if you're, I don't think they're going to. I think they would trade him because everybody has a price, but I don't think there's going to be anything out there.
What's
right
yours?
Now. My price, a second round pick.
Second round pick. Yeah. Mine's a third. Day two.
I like having a good backup quarterback.
I think there's a lot of people that hear you say that in their cars right now. Like Seth, you would hold out for a second round pick for Davis Mills.
Yeah.
This is a team that has Super Bowl aspirations, and I think a team that has Super Bowl aspirations has to have a capable backup quarterback that if you feel like if you need to get through 2-4 weeks, yeah, he can at least go 500 for you. And if you're in a playoff game, he gives you a puncher's chance.
Yeah, and I think also like when you, and I know, look, Case played well in that game. I think if you watch Case move and even on the throws that he made, I mean, the receivers bailed him out on a lot of those throws. They weren't picture perfect throws. It's not that I'm so in love with Davis Mills. I just think Davis Mills is the better option right now, long term.
If you had
to have somebody go four games, especially, then I think that's what the Texans were thinking last year. They kind of showed their hand in that. Yeah, the first week Case Keenum was the guy. The second week, they almost were thinking about going quarterback by committee.
They kind of did in that game. It was to their detriment, I think.
Case's physical weaknesses as an older quarterback would start to show up over the course of several games. So I think that Davis is just the smarter choice right now.
Here was Caserio in the pregame interview with John Harris talking about the quarterback situation.
Overall, it's been a good group. I mean, Davis, you know, he wasn't going to play regardless. You know, Davis is the backup quarterback, so he's not going anywhere. So between Case and Tim, probably have to make a decision on a third quarterback there. But overall, they've all had good springs. The big thing is just making good decisions, take care of the operation, get the ball out of your hand on time, understanding what they're doing the other side of the ball, and just try to move the ball down the field. Hopefully we can score some points.
All right, so there you go. I felt like that was a message to talk radio as much as anything else. Like, Davis isn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us spent the previous 3 or 4 days where Davis wasn't practicing trying to figure out where on the Minnesota Vikings depth chart he would fit in if they were to duke the Texans a fourth round pick or something like that. I think that was a little message from Caserio that's not going down, or that's what he's trying to put out there.
That was an emphatic, and I think Caserio knows and is aware that last year Davis Mills was the backup quarterback on the depth chart all year long, and then they sprung out Case Keenum.
Yeah.
So I think maybe as also maybe he wants to be really certain and put it in stone too, just because, so for Davis Mills' own confidence. I wonder if they've had that conversation with him about, like, okay, this is how it was last year. We feel like you're a different guy this year. You really understand the offense, and we trust you to be, if CJ goes down, you are the backup quarterback.
Hey, quick reminder, we're going to be giving away Texans tickets here sometime this hour to the game on Saturday afternoon. So be listening, front row seats in the bullpen. Be listening here in the 7 o'clock hour for that. I got to make sure we get this in this segment, because I have been chomping at the bit to hear what you think of this.
Mm-hmm.
Tua Tagovailoa was on the Dan Le Batard show earlier this week, and he killed Brian Flores. As much as an existing quarterback can kill a former head coach who's actually still in the league on a staff.
Minnesota.
He's in Minnesota.
He's the DC.
DC in Minnesota. So here was Tua, who we know played for Brian Flores his first couple years in the league, and it did not go well between those two. Here's a little light being shed on that from Tua's perspective.
To put it in simplest terms, if you woke up every morning and I told you you suck at what you did, that you don't belong doing what you do, that you shouldn't be here, that this guy should be here, that you haven't earned this right, and then you have somebody else come in and tell you, dude, you are the best fit for this. Like, you are accurate. You are the best whatever. You are this. You are that. Like, how would it make you feel listening to one or the other? You see what I'm saying? And then you hear it, regardless of what it is, the good or the bad. And you hear it more and more. You start to actually believe that. I don't care who you are. You could be the president of the United States. You have a terrible person that's telling you things that you don't want to hear, or that you probably shouldn't be hearing, you're going to start to believe that about yourself. And so that's sort of like what ended up happening. And it was, I mean, it's basically been, 2 years of training that out of not just me, but, you know, a couple of the guys as well that have been here since my rookie year all the way till now.
Okay, so I've heard, you know, when you read the headlines of this or what have you, I feel like there are a lot of people that had the immediate notion that, well, you're soft, Tua. What the hell? You're soft. Or is that? He played for Saban. You know, I don't think that was an issue for him there. So it's really hard not to just immediately go back to the various coaches that have coached under Bill Belichick and have made the mistake of thinking that everything Bill Belichick does is the way that you treat and handle players. Maybe watch the way that Belichick played with, interact with Brady, where Brady was a guy that Belichick would tear into in meetings. But while Brady understood that Belichick was doing that because Brady was top dog, you know, and that if Belichick could do it to Brady, then, you know, then everybody else would accept tough coaching, all of that. I think Flores might have just been that a guy as a head coach tried way too hard to be like Bill Belichick and tried to emulate all of his personality traits and everything. And you can't do that. Like, you just cannot. One of the, it's interesting. I want to talk to Nick about this. One of the books that Nick recommended to me, or that Nick had read recently, Nick Caserio had read recently, I was reading a part in there where it said one of the things, mistakes that people do is that they think that every, like, a great person, if they're great at one thing, then they must be great at everything. When in fact the opposite is true a lot of the times, because all your brain power that's devoted to what you're really good at, it sometimes creates some weaknesses. So there's things that Belichick does in the way that he operates or did that were just probably bad, you know, but because he has such genius in some regards, it made up for it. If you're not Bill Belichick specifically, you can't emulate all of the negative parts of his personality. And yet, all of these coaches over and over again, Matt Patricia and et cetera, they try to emulate every single aspect of Belichick's personality. If Tua hadn't played for Saban, I might think like, maybe he's a little soft or something. I think it's probably more just that Flores was just your classic ex-Patriots assistant.
Yeah.
You know?
I came away feeling a couple things when I heard that. One, I was glad that Brian Flores didn't get hired here as the head coach.
Yeah.
Because that almost happened, mm-hmm. right? And two, I think I'm guessing D'Amico is like this, that the good coaches, the good managers in business, the good leaders understand that, especially nowadays, that different people need to be managed different ways.
Yeah.
Different people respond to different styles of reinforcement, right? Mm-hmm. And Tua does not respond to extreme shame and embarrassment.
If a guy like Philip Rivers, somebody that's got a chip on his shoulder or something, and like you tell him one thing, he's gonna respond and prove you wrong.
Yeah,
like yeah, you recognize those types of guys. But I also wonder though too. I mean, again, without hearing Brian Flores' side of it or anything else, I think sometimes coaches mistake hard coaching or coaching somebody hard with just flat out being a jerk,
getting personal.
Right.
Yeah.
Versus like. Being very detailed and very tough on what your standards are and holding guys to that standard.
Yeah.
And criticizing a specific play hard is different than like an overall, you just suck. Nah, you're just not the guy. And again, I don't know how it was actually phrased.
Yeah, that's the thing. We're only getting Tua's side of it here. But the way Tua heard it, which is really all that matters in terms of the Dolphins, was that he heard he sucked and he doesn't belong in the league, and he heard it every day for however many years.
So I don't know. That's the way Tua heard it. It could be both sides. You know my old saying. I got it from Frank Gantz Sr. When you're a coach, you're not attacking the person. You're attacking the problem.
Right.
Always remember, you're attacking a problem. If you start feeling like you're attacking the person, you're not coaching. You're just being a jerk.
Yeah.
You know.
And at least that it feels like from Tua's perspective, that's how he heard it. Now you mentioned Brady. Brady was actually on McAfee yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and they asked him about this whole Tua Brian Flores thing, and Brady kind of brought up what you were talking about coach me the hardest.
Yeah.
And then other people. Here's Brady on McAfee yesterday.
If the coach was going to be hard on me, I was going to accept the difficult coaching because I needed to hear it. And again, it motivated me. And there was a lot of players on our team that would see me get coached hard and that they would say, okay, I got to step my game up because I don't want to get yelled at. Tom's getting yelled at. I don't want to get yelled at.
Yeah.
How do I up my game? And I think that's what accountability looks like. And you can't be, you know, so have your ego so big that, you know, any criticism is going to, you know, lessen your confidence. I mean, look, you're going out there in the Super Bowl in 2 weeks in Vegas and you got hundreds of millions of people watching. You better be tough at that point. You better have, you know, not go in there with, you know, a weak attitude.
Fragile.
I think you got to go in there and you got to embrace the challenge, embrace the opportunity. You're going to be tested. And if your coach tests you and your teammates test you, then you can go beat your competition.
Yeah. And that's where, again, without knowing exactly what the conversations or meetings are like, I could see both sides. I could see Tua being a little bit softer than most quarterbacks and certainly Tom Brady. But I could also see maybe Flores just not having a feel for it and going way overboard. And like you said, also just not understanding who you're coaching.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, exactly how this guy needs to be handled or treated. Maybe that's not the quarterback you want, but that's a quarterback on your team, and you got to figure out a way
to
do it the right way instead of trying to just, feeling sorry for yourself all the time. It's the other thing that guys that want to think that they're hard, that they're tough coaches sometimes fall into and they don't realize it, is that they're actually being really soft because they're whining instead of coaching. Because I've had coaches who thought they were hard asses. I'm like, dude, you're just whining. Like, you're really, you're
just feeling.
Did you tell him that? You're just feeling, yeah, I did. You're just feeling sorry for yourself. Like, you know, like, what are you doing? Not, just, that's never me. But not if they were doing it to me, but yeah. If it was a coach I had a relationship with, I'd say, there were, I won't say his name. I had that conversation with a coach once. I was like, well, what are you, you know, are you just, like, are you coaching him hard or are you just feeling sorry for yourself? And he got pissed, but then he said I had a good point. So it's there's like you gotta remember, like, okay, are you actually being a tough coach or are you just feeling sorry for yourself?
Seth Payne bringing the truth to the coaches, man.
I largely for the most part, I have a hard time biting my tongue on things sometimes, and not in a bad way. I'm glad I told
constructive
that coach
criticism.
That.
Yeah. Were you a veteran player at that point?
Yeah.
It would have been funny if you were a rookie. Hey, coach.
When I was a rookie, I did the Tom Coughlin impression at the rookie show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I got a lot of cred from that, from the veterans, because I went all in.
Was it a good impersonation?
Not a good impersonation. Well, the spirit of it.
The spirit of it was good. Yeah.
Just like that, the guy from Saturday Night Live that doesn't really do Shaq
Kenan
perfectly,
Thompson,
but
captures
the spirit
but it's
of
still
Shaq.
Funny.
Yeah. Well, Will Ferrell doing George W. Bush.
Good example.
He does it. He just kind of captures the spirit of
it.
Yeah. I did that. I got up and.
What did Coughlin think?
The biggest. He knows he's supposed to laugh in those things, so he was pretty funny because he took out his notepad and started writing.
Oh, acted like he was taking notes. That's funny.
Acted like he was crossing my name off the
list. That's funny. My brother, when he was playing for Lou Holtz, one time he commandeered the PA on the plane home from a win and started impersonating Coach Holtz on the PA. Gentlemen, that was a great game. That's a good job. They're going to be bringing around two fruits and two juices for you right now. Get out a book or get out a piece of paper. Write a personal philosophy. This sucker's going to be long. It's a long flight.
Lou Holtz was cool with it.
He was fine with it. Yeah.
Vrabel was the guy with the Patriots that Ted used to say could basically say anything, joke about whatever. Yeah.
One on every team.
Kyle Brady, the tight end, used to get up and do a Tom Coughlin impression on the flights in the back of the plane. Coaches were all sitting up in first class, so I don't know if
it's a bold move, man.
But one day he pulled out. Guys, so you guys need to know this, that Tom Coughlin played back in Syracuse back in the 1950s. He was a wide receiver. That's what football used to be
like. He ran really precise routes.
Yeah. he got up and he said, guys, I've never done this before, but I wanted to save it for a good occasion. I want you to be inspired by this. I stole it from his locker, and I've used it for inspiration ever since. And he pulled out from his back pocket Jim Brown's jockstrap. It was a huge jockstrap.
Pull out an actual jockstrap.
It was almost like it would have you believe that this was like Andre the Johnson's jockstrap. A lot of volume in there, and he was like, just look at.
Then he called him Andre the Johnson.
Think of the things that happened in this jockstrap.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Whose jockstrap was it, actually? Do you know? Do you remember?
Oh, no, I'm guessing it was Kyle's or somebody. He got it from the equipment staff beforehand. It looked like, it honestly looked like, that was where he fell short a little bit. It looked like a brand new jockstrap, yeah.
Oh, you should have colored it.
Yeah. Yeah, made it all yellowy and brown, everything.
Yeah. all right, Payne and Pendergast with
you.
So
for the kids, Jim Brown played at Syracuse.
Yeah,
Tom
Jim Brown
was a teammate of
arguably
his.
The greatest player in the history of the sport. Yeah,
lacrosse player, too.
Really,
I think
good
he's in the lacrosse Hall of Fame.
He might be
Jim Brown, not Tom Coughlin.
Jim Brown was an excellent lacrosse player. Up next is Joe Espada, a top three manager in Major League Baseball this season. I know I was out on him earlier this year, but has he done a top three job this season? We'll discuss that coming up next.
It's caught us by surprise.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hey, congrats, Josh and Seabrook, winner of the tickets, front row bullpen for the Texans and the Rams on Saturday. Text message, damn, I tried for the tickets, it ain't easy. Yeah, man, there can only be one, and this time it's Josh and Seabrook. But, faithful listener, you've got a chance in the noon hour, and you've got a chance in the 5 o'clock hour. All is not lost. Now, if you get through the drive with Sterner and Hughlin, you haven't won yet, then all is lost. Your life is trash, and you won't be able to go to the game on Saturday. Sorry about that. But you've got two more chances to fish your life out of the fryer here. So congrats to Josh and Seabrook, and we appreciate you listening. Again, noon hour, 5 o'clock hour, your next chances to win. On MLB Network yesterday, John Heyman was on there, longtime baseball scribe. Believe it, one time or another, he's been an Odyssey MLB insider, may still be. He was asked to rate the top five jobs being done by managers this season. Joe Espada showed up on the radar, man, for a guy who was 12-24 at one point. Everybody wanted to run out of town, present company, me included. Joe Espada, number three on the list.
That start, the sweep against the Yankees at home, got swept. Just not good start for Joe Espada in their managing career. He's done a terrific job. I mean, they've had eight starting pitchers go on the IL at one point or another. Not sure if McCullers is ever getting back, but they've gotten some of them back now. And obviously picked up Kikuchi. You're going to have Verlander soon. So, I mean, they are another team that is now a threat. I mean, look, they had a 10-game deficit, as you mentioned. They erased that quicker than any team has ever erased a 10-game deficit. Now they have a 4-game lead, and I think everybody believes that they're going to carry it through with the nucleus that they do have, but their rotation, shockingly enough, looks like it's in pretty good shape, and Joe Espada has really done a terrific job.
That, we'll talk about Espada in a second. That last part there, Seth, might be the most shocking part here, given what the narrative was early in the season about the starting rotation. Not just the performance of it, but the injury issues that the starting rotation was having, that now the belief is that it's the starting rotation that's going to be the bedrock and the foundation of this playoff run that the Astros are about to go on is pretty remarkable. And we're going to give a spot of credit here, but I think you got to give credit to Miller and Murphy, the pitching coaches. And you got to give credit to Dana Brown, too. The Kikuchi trade looks, four starts in, it looks like a lot of us were wrong about how much they gave up to get Kikuchi. And it was Dana Brown who recommended that they treat Ronel Blanco like a starting pitcher coming into
this
season.
That's true. Yeah, that's well. Yeah. And that was before the... excuse me. Sorry. That's not like a... I didn't mean to ahem there. Like, I was about to say something sarcastic.
Oh, gotcha.
That was a genuine...
This is a legit throat clear.
I'm still doing it. Give Dana Brown credit for that. And then Espada, you know, it was hard because you've got no track record with him other than in the playoffs last year as a manager after Dusty Baker got ejected. But you don't necessarily
a good
have
a track record, right, too. Small sample size.
Right, it was a good track record, but it was also included pinch hitting John Singleton, which could have gone either way.
That
easily could have gone either way.
Oh, I know.
So you didn't. You're trying hard not to blame Espada for the fact that he's got to figure out what to do with Abreu. You're trying not to blame Espada for the fact that your pitchers were just curiously and historically bad and worse than they ever had been in their careers. That none of your all-star caliber previous MVP candidate hitters were hitting at all or playing like even average major league pitchers. So every little questionable decision he had, it was easy for it to loom a lot larger in your mind. I think where I really started to feel the turnaround for Espada was once Abreu was gone, and all of a sudden, even though you had guys who weren't necessarily great hitters but were fast, and all of a sudden you could execute small ball, you could lay down some bunts, you could manage your lineup in a way. I thought he started really showing what he was capable of, and it was an impossible to judge situation early on because there were so many things that unless Espada himself could somehow be pinned with all those guys underperforming, none of that was his fault. Dude, that was just flat out guys not playing up to their capabilities.
No, nobody screamed more shaking their fists about Jose Abreu than I did.
Yeah.
For the last year and a half until he was finally cut, nobody screamed about it more than I did. And I'll be honest, I think I undersold it. Like, just for this season.
The effect that it had on everybody
else.
The
effect it had on the lineup.
How clunky your lineup, your fielding, everything.
The black cloud that everybody knew that this guy had no business being on a major league roster, let alone being in the lineup every day and then propped up by management as well.
Right.
Like, being treated differently. Man, I said it at the time, and I used to say that back when, and I hate to say it because we had him on the pregame show this weekend. But when Gary Kubiak was doing that stuff with Matt Schaub, the year that Schaub's game clearly was declining, and he would keep bringing him back in, substituting him in for Case Keenum, my thought at the time back then was, this is not fair to the guys on the team that are actual good football players right now, you know? And that's how I felt about Jose Abreu. But I think the proof is in the record. The proof is in stylistically what this team, as you make a great point, like stylistically what this team has looked like once you get that gigantic grenade out of the middle of your lineup there. Spada can cook a little bit.
That's the thing with Abreu, where it was, okay, maybe if he was fast, you know, even if like as an older guy that was fast and still would give you competitive at-bats. Because those are the two things. It was such a drain in so many ways. He couldn't do anything when he was on the base paths. He couldn't get on base. He wasn't giving you competitive at-bats. Like, none of that was helping.
You couldn't even DH him.
Right.
Because he sucked at hitting. Like, he was one thing. A bad first baseman.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Like, if he could play, like, a lot of these guys now on this roster can play, the outfielders can, you know, most of them play multiple outfield positions. Dubon, obviously, has been a Swiss Army knife. Some of these guys are bringing up from the minors. Do they do it great? DeCenzo at first base? No, but he can play multiple positions for you. Yiner Diaz being able to play multiple positions for you. Like, there's a fluidity and a flexibility to the lineup now that's impossible to have when you've got a bad player just sitting right there at seven every night.
Honestly,
in the lineup.
I think the worst thing that happened to the 2024 Astros was Abreu playing well in September of last year.
I agree.
I think that's the
one thing
that they were able to look at and think, well, he's still got it in him. And look, that was later in the year, but... You know, and part of that later in they started resting Abreu more in 2023 towards the end, and that seemed to help him out, which, you know, in hindsight.
He had an IL stint at one point,
days. And they weren't starting him every night, and that seemed to make a difference, just keeping him fresher. And I think they thought, because of that, they figured, well, if we manage him right, then he's still got that in him. So it ends up, if he had played well in September and the Astros had won the ALCS or something, maybe I'd feel differently about it, but... Looking back on it now, it was all for naught, and it kept their hope for him alive way longer than it should have been.
The other five in Heyman's top five, Matt Cotaro, Kansas City. He's done a great job this year. They're a playoff team right now, I believe. Torey Lovullo of Arizona, and then Espada is three. Steven Vogt in Cleveland has done a phenomenal job with the Guardians at two. And then Pat Murphy, Milwaukee, is one. A little Pat Murphy trivia. I may or may not have brought this up on the show before. He was the baseball coach at Notre Dame when I was a student there. My freshman year, you were a freshman back in 1987 at Notre Dame. You had to take gym.
Oh, yeah.
You had to take PE.
We did, too. I think I should probably still have that.
Do you think?
At a lot of places,
okay,
yeah.
I was a little surprised when I got to college and I had to take gym. I didn't have to take gym as a junior and senior in high school. And now I'm a freshman in college. I'm having to take gym. Pat Murphy was my gym teacher.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was he a good gym teacher?
He was an awesome gym teacher. He was fun, man. He was cool.
Did you have to... No, you took gym. Like, it wasn't like a specific, like, you're going to take one... Like, we had the choice. I didn't have to because I was football counted as my PE requirement. But you could take, like, rock climbing or, like,
we didn't have anything that exotic.
Something like that.
We went to the facility that had the actual gymnasium in it.
Yeah.
And there were, like, three choices. We could play dodgeball. We could play some combo kickball thingy or, you know, jog.
Did you guys run around
the track.
Did you guys have to pass a swim test to graduate?
I don't remember.
I don't think so because we only because it always gets pointed out to me.
Yeah,
people mock it and laugh at that. At Cornell, you have to pass a swim test to graduate. It wasn't part of PE class,
right?
At some point in your 4 years there, you had to go and swim like four lengths of the pool. And I still to this day feel like that should be a requirement at every college. You know how many people drown?
Yeah, no, you're
just,
right.
It's not always the dumbest. Sometimes it's just something awful. But if you don't know how to swim, it's a hazard you shouldn't be walking through life with.
CPR and swimming, yes. They should
it's the third leading cause of unintentional injury death worldwide. Sarah.
There's
only one college in America that cares about you.
It's Cornell. The football players had to take gym at Notre Dame. I remember this because Ricky Waters used to stand shirtless in front of the mirror staring at himself after gym class.
Uh-huh.
And I remember one of my buddies walked up to him and said, "Hey, Ricky, why do you do this? Why do you stand in front of the mirror?" And he looks at me and goes, "It makes me feel good." That was great. He would go on to have a near Hall of Fame career in the NFL.
I wish I had an ego like that. Well, and the physique to match that. You know, that's a whole...
Ricky was off the charts, man. All right, Dameon Pierce. Seth brought Dameon Pierce up as a Texans aspect earlier that had him peeing down his leg a little bit. So if they need to move on from Dameon Pierce, I made a list yesterday. Five teams I would call if I were Nick Caserio, if I were looking to unload Dameon Pierce for a draft pick. Let's see see what Seth thinks of these. I'll go through the list coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts!